Welcome back. You're watching StockWatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are independent analysts Ashraf Mohammed and Willem Oldewacher from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. I'll start with you, Ashraf. Interesting day in the markets, you know, the past couple of days or week, if I may say so myself. Where is this bounce coming from? I mean, is it the good news coming out of China, you know, saying most of the, you know, the tech clampdown, which has been a year long, is behind us? And obviously, or maybe is it the fact that, you know, there has been no community transmissions, you know, in the past 3 days, that side in terms of COVID, and maybe those news is driving, you know, the markets positively, because maybe that economy is going to, you know, go back and open up, and we will have less and less supply chain worries.
You know, Bright, I think that it's a combination of things. It's interest rate concerns. It's rising inflation, and then of course there's China, and I think China is the least of the issues. I think the inflation uncertainty is definitely weighing on the markets. And if you look at year-to-date performances of the S&P, it's down minus 11%. NASDAQ down minus 23% as of an hour ago. So you are looking at a market that has pulled back significantly. And I think is just having a bit of a respite in terms of the rally we're seeing right now. I don't expect this to be the turn and for us to end positively for the year.
Okay, so how are you reading these markets, Willem? Because, I mean, there's like I said, there's a lot of positive news, but, I mean, if you're looking for bad news, there's no shortage of them as well, because for example, we looked at, you know, those New York manufacturing numbers that are looking very anemic, to say the least.
Yes, so I'm thinking, sort of I'm scouring my mind for all the little bits of positive news this week. So I think US consumption was like 0.9% versus 1% expected, so a tiny bit slower, so that might be like soft on inflation.
Yeah,
I know JP Morgan sort of backtrack on the statement like 2 months ago that China is uninvestable to today, upgrading all their China tech to about double the target prices they had. So that's a little bit of positive news. And then the vice premier, China's vice premier, Liu He, did sort of hold a conference with tech stocks. But with all those, I mean, if you listen to those three positive news snippets, they don't sound impressive against 8% US inflation and rising sort of the Fed coming at us. So to be honest, I agree. I think this is what is now to be known as a bear trap. I don't think this is the turn. And I think as long as we're in a tightening cycle from especially the Eurozone and America, I think the market will sort of stay constrained.
Okay, let's talk about, you know, local markets for a bit. Pick and Pay numbers came out. What did you make of those, Willem?
Very interesting. I mean, actually a very good result given the tough operating environment. I think revenue grew by 5% and HEPS by 15%. So overall, a very typical sort of Pick and Pay result. Quality, I know they're sort of, they are sort of changing the shape of the way they operate, sort of having a low-end, sort of a low LSM business, the Boxer business, then a mid LSM business, and then obviously the sort of well-known Pick and Pay business.
Yeah.
And then I guess the sort of most interesting part of the call with was the fact that they're going to be partnering with Takealot in terms of deliveries. So overall, fairly positive. I'm not saying the stocks are buy, but I think the management's pretty proud of that result.
Yeah. And if you had to invest, Ashraf, in the local market in terms of, you know, local retailers, which one would be your retailer of choice in the current environment, betting on a turnaround in consumer spending in this country?
So Bright, my expectation is that there's going to be no turnaround in consumer spending.
For the
I
next
think that
while.
the consumers, for the remainder of this year, I think the
Okay.
consumer will be constrained, especially by increasing fuel prices as well as the interest rate increase that I'm anticipating for Thursday of 50 basis points. So where I sit right now is I would buy Woolworths because its downside is limited and there is David Jones that is up for sale.
Okay, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a change of strategy in that management. There's a lot of, change inevitable. But anyways, let's jump into our questions for today. This one is from Jabu Mahlangu, who says, "Good evening. What is the panel's view on Nampak at these levels?" Ashraf, Nampak?
I know Nampak is looking cheap, but I don't think we'll see a turnaround in the South African business. Angola, Nigeria, you could see an improvement because those are oil-dependent countries. So those economies will pick up.
Yep.
But my expectation is I'd rather be closer to the commodity stocks right now, and my stock pick is a commodity stock this evening.
Okay, don't ruin it. Don't say it just yet. And your thoughts around Nempec, Willem?
Sure, yeah. So, interesting company. Like Ashraf says, maybe it's cheap, but I think for the foreseeable future, but by that I mean sort of 12 to 18 months, the sort of small cap, mid cap space, there's nothing wrong with buying this stock if you like it long term, but I don't think you'll be able to sell it to anyone for quite a long time. I think people are sort of very afraid and sticking to sort of like large cap, like sort of as a proxy for quality. But yes, like interesting, like I say, I would buy it, like even for my PA, but just be prepared to sort of wait for your returns.
Sure, and that brings a question of opportunity cost, which we could go down another rabbit hole there. Two questions. They're both coal producers, I guess. Let's start with Kumba, which was up a lot today. Do you know the reason why they're up a lot today, Ashraf? Sorry, Kumba Iron Ore. Is the question is around Kumba?
Sorry, I lost you there.
Yeah, no problem.
I think I have a problem with connectivity. So just with regards to Kumba and the iron ore companies, I think that when they announced their production numbers in April, in fact, on the 21st of April, the share price had a significant reset, if you could call it that. And I think what people are beginning to realize is that the iron ore price is going to remain at around current levels of $127 a ton. So my expectation is that with the weaker rand, a fairly stable iron ore price, we could see Kumba paying another healthy dividend. Kumba is trading on a dividend yield currently of just over 20%. My expectation is even if you cut 30% off that heat.
Yeah, Ashraf, we're losing you there. Let me jump and ask, the question to you, Willem. What are your thoughts around Kumba?
Sure. So I'm going to quickly summarize what Ashraf said, just in case people missed that. So Kumba's results, they brought out a production update in the middle of April where they sort of missed guidance and the market sold off heavily. And I think that was very much a sentiment sort of based sell-off. If you were to take the iron ore price at spot and the dollar price at spot, Kumba still trades at above 20% dividend yield.
Yes.
So it was actually sort of an interesting entry opportunity. So all that said, Kumba is still down heavily year to date with sort of similar fundamentals to last year. So I agree completely with Ashraf. I think it was very cheap. It's still quite cheap. And if you just sort of extrapolate the current iron ore price or just the futures curve and the ZAR, I think for the next 2 years, you're going to get some serious dividends out of Kumba. So I think there's just some market players have just realized this and sort of stocked up.
Yeah, very interesting. Then now let's contrast that to an Exxaro, which, you know, they still have the issue of getting the call to the port, which is, like, I guess, what everyone is trying to solve for, you know, in the interim. I'll start with you, Willem.
Sure. So Exxaro, so interesting company. It's mainly coal, and then they've started with that. I think it's called Synergy, which is a green sort of energy business, mainly, I think, wind farms. And then they own 20% of one of Kumba's larger mines, the Sishen Iron Ore Company. So those commodities, coal, I mean, my eyes water every morning. I look at the coal price. I think it went from maybe $100 to $300, and it's just stuck. You know, Thungela is like the everybody's favorite pick, and I think Exxaro is probably still up 50 or 60% for the year. But at the moment, as long as they sell it, they are properly printing money. So, yes, in terms of both of those companies, I think if you like dividends, you can hold on to it.
So it's a story of, you know, if you got in early and, you know, you've held your shares, you should be reaping the rewards now. Any differing thoughts there, Ashraf?
None at all, because that's my stock pick.
Okay, yeah, no problem. Let's move on to Grindrod. Grindrod Grindrod is from Uwat Tose, is asking if Grindrod is a good investment for the long term. Willem?
I'm not sure if it's Grindrod Shipping or Limited.
That's what I was trying to see, but it's not saying. So let's speak about both.
It's interesting. I mean, it's a typical beta stock. I know, like, if you go for the Limited, you get the bank and sort of a few interesting things. But like I said, the same sort of story as with Nampak. They are very small cap stocks and liquidity is very low. So if you sort of support the idea of the company and you like it, like, you should be prepared to buy it. But I think, again, it's sort of the opportunity cost of capital might override the fact that it's sort of a well priced, not, I mean, I think it's under 10p, but it's not screaming at you. So I'm very afraid to recommend buying that sort of stock right now.
Oh, okay. And any thoughts, Ashraf, on Grindrod before we go to the break?
So I would say I wouldn't rush into Grindrod Shipping right now. I've taken a look at that specific stock. But Grindrod...
Unfortunately, we lost Ashraf there to load shedding. Hopefully next time that doesn't happen. Before we went to the break, Willem, we're talking about, you know, Grindrod Shipping, but now let's move on to more international companies. We've got a question here from Yash Pillay, who says, thanks for the opportunity. Is it worth building a long-term position of Walt Disney Company at these price levels? It seems very cheap. There are some near-term catalysts, such as the recovery in theme parks and a potential growth in the Disney streaming services. Is Disney one that you look at closely, Willem?
I've got a decent idea, especially of the sector around it. So I don't think I understand what you're saying in terms of it looks cheap sort of technically if you just look at a share price graph. But if you look at something like CNN Plus or Netflix, subscriber counts are coming down. And I think similar to something like food delivery, these subscription services were net beneficiaries of the COVID pandemic. And that's, I'm not saying it's coming to an end, but that's definitely slowing with vaccinations and sort of the rollout of that. So ultimately, I think it's still sort of large tech, and a lot of these things are sort of based on eyeballs rather than fundamentals, which is, you know, it's not the sort of thing I invest in. So I'd wait for a real catalyst. I see what you're saying with Disney Plus and the streaming service, but I think you're sort of not late to the party, but I think a lot of the money that's been made has been made, and I think it's going to take quite a long time for the market to reprice those companies.
Okay, interesting. So you're not as bullish as many people are on streaming, especially after the big dips that we've seen recently. We have another question here on the SMS line. It says, please, could you let me know one's thoughts on Jubilee Metals? It didn't have a sign off.
Sure. I can't even remember what they mine. That's a small company. I don't want to comment on something I don't know. If it's a precious commodity miner, I'd watch out.
No.
If it's
No, that's fine. We have a question from Dino, which is on Royal Bafokeng Platinum, RB Plat. So as we approach the 18th of June, which is the expiry of the Implats offer, what happens to the PIC and the union, who together control about 13% of RB Plat, do not accept the Implats offer? Is it likely that RB Plat share price will slide to pre-offer levels? And will the two significant minorities, Implats and Northam, be able to work together in the future? A very technical question here.
Very interesting question, yes. So, no, I don't think that would be a problem at all. I don't know what the PIC's intentions are. I'm assuming they would actually accept the offer. But Northam's been in play for a long time, and if you sort of calculate the fair value of the offer, it's traded at a premium for a long time, so I don't think it will slide. I think there are people who buy Royal Bafokeng, who buy Royal Bafokeng just for sort of out of fundamentals, and that sort of answers the second part of the question. The synergies and the sort of management quality that's going to come is more from, to be honest, Implats side than Northam side at the moment, is very positive, and I think the amount of sort of for PGM metals. I mean, if you listen to the managements of the two acquiring companies speak about Royal Bafokeng, this is a really impressive asset, and that's why there's a bidding war. So the short answer is no, I don't think the share will slide, and yes, the synergies are going to be value accretive.
So you still think there's potential of a further deal if this one fails? Interesting. We got a question here from Matthew Proctor, who says, "Hi, Bright. What is the view of a long-term shareholder of Vukile if you're looking for good dividends over time? According at 6 Rand, are they a very good company for dividend play? Regards, Matt."
So yes, generally they are. Most REITs are. So that's sort of what they're built for. The real estate investment trust structure sort of gears itself towards paying a dividend. I also bought some property stocks through the pandemic, and I know how you feel. They haven't recovered yet, but you are probably getting like an 8 to 10% dividend yield, which I think is very impressive. So yes, I think that's perfect reason to hold on to something like Vukile.
Look, if you were brave enough to go in when, a lot of us weren't brave enough to buy into property, especially, I mean, you're smiling to the bank, like you're saying, and some of them are restating those income streams. So you've been paid for that handsomely. Let's quickly talk about the earnings that came out at the on the US front. We had Walmart on the one hand, on the other hand we had a Home Depot. Walmart seemed to have missed a lot, especially on the e-commerce side of things, where they had 1% year-on-year growth. That's terrible. And Home Depot is shooting the lights out. Why such a big dichotomy between the two companies?
Yeah, so I mean, the market's never wrong. So yep, Obviously Walmart's done worse than Home Depot. Sorry for pointing out the obvious there. It's just it's very simple. So Walmart also were pretty downbeat on their guidance. They restated it downwards, which is always quite a bad thing to see. Lots of times, the current result is actually priced in because there would have been guidance. Analysts would have sort of had a chance to meet with management. And most of the market should know, unless it's a very large beat or miss, what to expect. But I think the future outlook of the two companies obviously was so far diverged that it could honestly be a switch. They're not exactly the same, but they're still a similar sort of business. So if you're a large BlackRock or so, and you sort of see the future, it's sort of given to you for free from the management teams, you sell the one and you buy the other, and then you get like a massive price dispersion on the day.
Interesting. We've got a question here from Devin, who says, "I own both Standard Bank and Standard Bank Pref shares, and I bought them during the pandemic. Which one do I let go of and why?"
Oh, that's an interesting question, Devin. if you had to sell one, I'd sell the Standard Bank ordinary share, just because that's exposed to sort of the economy and everything else. I actually don't want to sell anything, to be honest, but you asked. So the Standard Bank Pref is up for an offer, so you can just wait for that if I understand it correctly.
Okay, so between the Prefs and the ordinary shares, you're going with the ordinary shares. Interesting. And if I may ask, what would you be buying in this market if you're getting rid of something like the ordinary shares of Standard Bank? What do you use that capital for?
That is a very tough question, Bryce.
I thought it was a buyer's market.
While we are in this hiking environment, I've got a stock pick because it's sort of my duty, but overall, I'm so afraid to touch anything, something with a strong balance sheet and good fundamentals. But I just sit in cash for the next sort of 4 to 5 Federal Open Market Committee meetings and see when they sort of start becoming more dovish.
Okay, interesting. I see we've got a question here from Tamsan Ganeto. It says, watch the space. It's posted a company called Invictus Energy, which is listed on the ASX, which is the Australian stock market. I don't know if he's asking us a question about it or not. Do you follow Invictus Energy?
I don't, but Tamsan quite knows his stuff, so I'm assuming it's something like renewables, or he's sneaky and it's coal, but no, I don't know what they do.
Oh, okay, fantastic. Let's scroll down, you know, the weeds of Twitter. We've got a question here from Mami, who's asking us about Spotify. Spotify has been down a lot recently. I understand why. I should ask, you know, if it's worth buying for the long term. I've always had a problem with Spotify because, you know, they're getting squeezed by the record label on the one side, and they're trying to increase, obviously, the independent artists on the one side, and obviously trying to grow as well on the third side, which is through podcasting. And it hasn't actually come together as, you know, the way they sold the story. So do you have any thoughts on Spotify?
Yes, I remember, I don't know if you recall, we spoke about this on Velocity, like one of my first shows there, and we sort of got to the same conclusion that it's sort of maybe, I think we said it was the best of the ones, you know, Apple Music, some of the streaming services that were available back then. But I think I feel so bad to sort of keep on reiterating the same message, but I don't think at the moment company fundamentals are the main driver of equity valuations. I think there's a lot of sentiment involved. And I think especially something like Spotify, whether we like to sort of admit it or not, it's such a sort of fringe discretionary sort of purchase. You can definitely live without your Spotify account. So with inflation at 8%, I wouldn't buy Spotify just yet. Maybe it's a good business model and maybe things will change and they'll get sort of subscriber growth. But the sort of economic outlook for the next, I mean, I think Ashraf was on the same page while he was still with us.
Yes.
For the next sort of foreseeable sort of 6 to 12 months, things are going to be sort of tough. The consumer is definitely going to be constrained, and you know, the discretionary sort of spend, I think, will be sort of lower.
Yeah, no, the reason why I said what I said, I mean, year to date, you look at the share price of something like a Spotify, it's down 56%. And you're saying this is the same business, you know, that it was not so long ago. Why, you know, why is it selling off like, you know, a Beyond Meat, which, you know, was mostly a profit of revenue, I mean, a promise of revenues. And I mean, Spotify doesn't have that problem.
Yes, I mean, I agree. That's an amazing number. But how much was it up last year? You know, so it's like, when were we wrong? Was it it quadrupled in 2 years and then it halved in the fourth year or the third year? Like, is it cheap now, or was it just incredibly expensive? Sort of just on that, while we're speaking about that, look at something like the ARK Innovation Fund, or the, I think it was called the sort of Goldman Sachs Tech Index. All of those are back to their pre-pandemic levels, and it happened sort of fairly rapidly, but maybe it was just fair repricing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's bring it back to SA Inc. We have a question here from Njabulo, who's asking about Aspen. Your thoughts on Aspen? Exactly.
I'll be honest, we bought an incredibly large stake for the fund in the start of 2021, and we sold it sort of last November, December. And the same thing, it got so incredibly ramped on the sort of vaccine news. And I think what happened was suddenly sort of the WHO was saying, listen, we need to sort of help Aspen sell these vaccines. And I don't think the market is sort of – Aspen is so difficult to understand. I don't know if you've ever looked at it. You need to be a doctor to actually sort of forecast it. But lots of analysts just sort of build traditional models. So it's sort of anesthetics and thrombosis. And what happened there was, I think it was sort of the – you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because I don't think they bolted a plant. They converted a plant which can be used for different vaccines, but the horse has bolted. Everybody's realized sort of, maybe they aren't going to be selling 1 billion vaccines a year, and it's sort of broken down. I think there's a price, I don't know, maybe like 130, 120 Rand. it would look interesting again, because I mean the fundamentals are there. It's a pretty good company with a, they fixed their balance sheet completely. I don't know how long you've been covering it, but they had the whole sort of baby formula business that they got rid of, and they sort of like, they really sort of shook things together, and then the market just sort of, yeah, sort of overestimated the vaccine.
Yeah, I know. Aspen is a tough one to value, so I'm not going to get into the weeds of that. I have to take your stock pick for the evening.
Perfect. Okay, so I'm going to regret this, I think.
No, you won't.
It's going to be Prosus. So
yes,
it's been such a long time. It's a lot to focus on. I've said Prosus before. I think at like $1,000, and it's now sort of closer to 800. So if you liked it at 1,000 and nothing's changed, you should like it more at 800. That's the sort of, it sounds bad, but that's the first sort of basic logic. And then lots of brokers are starting to see sort of, so JP Morgan, I mentioned at the start of the show, was sort of starting to upgrade China Tech, Luhi, and the general flow of information is still so positive from China. I think at some point the excess selling clears, and this is purely a fundamental sort of value play. So Prosus is trading at a 55% discount, Naspers at a 65% discount or more. It depends on how you sort of see the unlisted portfolio. And sort of as a reasonable investor, as much as you can be disgruntled with the structure, disgruntled with the CGT, disgruntled with the management, the value is there. And in a market environment that we're on right now, I think it's much safer to sort of go on that than to sort of buy sort of excessive tech stock. So yes, Prosus will be my stock pick for tonight.
So since Ashraf is not here to give us his stock pick, I think he said Kumba. That's his stock pick for the evening. Yours is Prosus. I mean, if JP Morgan is going overweight, saying, you know, something needs to happen with the 56%, difference in valuation, I like it too at these levels. Thank you very much for pulling up, Willem. Thanks to my guests, independent analysts Ashraf Mohammed and Willem Oldewache from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Stockwatch is back again tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.